back at last. Welcome to the Nearbound podcast. I am so excited. I shocked my guests into the room. So excited to have Max Traylor here. Max, welcome to the Nearbound podcast, my friend.
I'm excited now. Let's rock and roll.
You didn't realize that we had an intro, Isaac. We got this.
I didn't realize you were excited. Now I'm ready.
Wait a second. You know, Jared, is he ever not excited?
He's the front man. Yeah. No, he's the lead singer, and I'm somewhere in the back. But when you tag me in, like, I'm ready for a solo.
Well, okay. So this is a good setup. Before we recorded, you said something that I thought was hilarious, and I want to start right there. You said agencies could be bleeding out in the street and they still don't want to. And then I think you said, like, what, they don't want to change.
You'd still have a tough time getting them to put on a Band-Aid. But Isaac, that's not fair. You're taking that out of context.
I know,
you
had exactly. said something. Exactly. We need a saucy.
I like agencies.
We need a saucy way to start. So that was given that statement, how have you been so successful helping agencies make more money? How have you convinced
How them do you to feel about Band-Aid agencies, out? Max? It's a great business model, everyone. Perfect. Look, it's professional services at its finest. It eats you up and spits you out. You got really strong people that get eaten alive. The problem is, when you do good work, clients want you to do more things, and the more things you do, the harder it is to stand for something to do good work. So it's a business where you have to fight what clients are asking for, and that's bass ackwards. So most of us just get gray hairs and, you know, see it through. But I don't mean like they actively don't want help. It's just like sometimes you're so overwhelmed with the amount of work and the complexities of a business, you don't know where you can make a commitment to change something.
Mm. Right. I think for the folks that have picked up a copy of Nearbound and the Rise of the Who Economy, Max.
Oh, Jared, I happen to have one right here. What are the odds?
Yes. We all have a copy. There we go.
Oh, look at that. Max came prepared.
I bring up Max in the book at a pretty important point. And I bring up Max whenever we're starting to talk about agency programs. And Max has kind of been, I'll say it. He's my favorite guy when it comes to, you know, how to help agencies. Right. So if you have a partner program and you're listening to this, an agency program in SaaS in particular, in my opinion, is the hardest thing to do in SaaS, is to build a solutions partner program. Like, that's playing the game on expert mode, because you have to convince someone that isn't on your payroll, right, to build a service, a solution, an offering, and then market it and sell it and service it. And all of that work up front, they don't get paid for. Like, you're paid to do that job, but they're not, right? You know, you're making that base salary at the partner program, but anytime that they're not billing a client, they're not getting paid, right? So it's the hardest thing to do in SaaS. And Max is, I think he's probably coached as many agencies as anyone that I know. And he's helped me solve, in kind of in part, and we got some stuff that we'll talk about later too, what he's referred to as the pirate island problem. And I've actually had multiple people call that out in the book, Max. Like, I love that pirate island section. So Max, for the folks that are listening, what is the pirate island problem?
If you haven't been there before, you can't explain how to get there. The problem that software companies have in helping agencies create services is they're not an agency and they don't do services.
Right.
You know, so unless you hire somebody out of an agency that's like, yeah, I can, I've been there. I was bleeding out on the street. I know what it feels like. It's tough. And, you know, convincing an agency to position themselves differently, fine. To sell differently, fine. To change the core of their being, what they have attached to value and self-worth, their service, that's like, that's like difficult.
It's like convincing a software company, you know, you really should sell this other software product. Right, like you should change everything about. You're asking them.
Yeah,
to change
like
their
reveal.
Product.
No. Reveal trash. It should be completely different. Like, that wouldn't go over well. That's basically right. What you're telling agencies.
It's the hardest problem in SaaS.
Well, and so what? Where has that been successful? Like, how do you start with where they already are and not say, "Hey, what you're doing sucks. Do something totally different." But at the same time, get them to
make changes.
I'm glad we're talking about this because when I first met Jared, I was a child and I didn't know the answer to that. Hmm. The answer is don't even waste your time with people that haven't done strategy before. Hmm. It's like, if you haven't tried this drug, you can't explain it. You can't explain. Remember, I told you before the call, when I first started doing strategy, I was 22 years old. And for the first time, these executives treated me like a big boy. Hmm. You're invited to the decision maker table. They're asking you questions like, hey, who do you think we should hire? And you're like, what? don't mind if I do. You know, and up until then, I have these calls of like, oh, Max, can you change the shade of purple on the website? So if you haven't done strategy before, I can't explain it to you. It's the same thing as the Pirate Island thing. So I intentionally look for people that have done strategy and all the other services. Mm-hmm. And I say, show me the books. And then they can't show me the books because they don't have time to measure profitability of strategic services to the tactical delivery ones. But I can generally get them to agree that it feels better. They're making more money. They maintain stronger relationships with client executive teams when they do strategy work. So it's a much easier conversation when they like accidentally have stumbled into it when they've sampled it. And you're like, you remember that feeling? We can harness that. And then after 1 or 2 years, you can convince them to burn the implementation business to the ground, which is a chapter in my book. It's called Burn the Implementation Business to the Ground. But I don't actually advocate that you literally set it on fire. I just advocate that you, here's an idea, do more of the profitable stuff and less of the non-profitable stuff.
So with that in mind, what we kind of talk about, and for the folks that were looking at it, it's chapter 10 of the Nearbound book, where we kind of talk a little bit more in depth about the Pirate Island problem, how to get the map. So the second thing underneath the Pirate Island problem that Max is describing, which also applies to strategy, is how can you guide an agency on where they're supposed to go if you yourself haven't been there? Like, Isaac, this is almost the same thing as like trust comes from helping people reach their promised land. But the paradox is we only trust people who've been to the places we want to go. If you, as the partner leader or as the business, has not built a value-added service that you have sold and put into accounts and they're like, this was great, right? Or a strategy, a package, some productized intellectual property, what gives you the right to tell an agency that they should? You know, what you're doing is you're obfuscating all of the responsibility and the hard work over to that company that doesn't work on your payroll, asking them to do the hardest thing. So the solution that Max kind of taught me was like, and I've had an agency too, so this is why it resonated with me. He was like, Jared, do the work. Like, what do you want agencies to sell? It's not just your software, because they couldn't care less. Yeah. Well, you go sell it. You go build it. And I'm like, whoa, what a hard thing to do. But that's the only answer that I found.
And record it.
Right. Document it. Document, yeah, don't create.
I don't believe you, Jared. Oh, watch me. That's been my, you know, when I was anyway, won't get into the whole professional paintball thing, but people were like, you can't do that. And I'd be like,
you can't just,
I played professional paintball for like 20 years. I got to number 5 in the world. I'm upset. That's why I do golf now. Like I just need like an outlet. I have like an obsessive competitive thing. But the point is, like, clients of mine have said, like, you just do it. And that's kind of unique about you, is before I try to explain it, I just say, well, let's go do it and see how it works, and I'll record everything. Mm-hmm. So, the Pirate Island analogy, I guess, over, and by the way, thank you for making me wait 140 pages to figure out that I'm in the book, 'cause I didn't know. Nobody told me. But it tells you that I've read it 140 pages deep.
All right. I gotta go. I gotta go give Alex a hard time for not giving you a heads up on that.
Anyway, I'm in there. Loved it. And going along with that analogy, like, let's say you give someone the map and they're like, wow, this looks like a good map. They get a month into their journey and they hit an unbelievable storm. They're like, F this, we're turning back. You didn't say anything about the challenges along the way. Because the thing about consulting is or any service, is it's half like, here's how you do it. And then it's half empathy, reading the other person, changing on the fly, adapting where you can adapt and are allowed to adapt without sacrificing some of the principles that would ruin it, that would ruin the relationship. So the way to give somebody confidence to push through that storm is to say, here's the video of me doing it with an executive team, falling on my face and recovering and it being okay. And here's the review that they gave me and the check that they cut me. This is a part of the game. It's not all sunshine and rainbows.
And I think this is where I mentioned this in the book too, but I've said it multiple times and it bears saying again that I truly believe that all solutions or agency programs need to emanate from like customer success. Like they have to. And why is that? Well, if you're a partner person and you believe in the gospel that is nearbound, and you do not have the ability to demonstrate what customer success is, right? Like, where are my customers going? If you're not tacitly close to that problem, how are you supposed to go build an ecosystem of people that are? And what are you going to find is this, because when we did this at Drift, like there's not a ton, I don't have tons of at-bats doing this across dozens of SaaS companies, but I have followed your advice and I produced the Conversational Marketing Blueprint. You know, Max, that became something that the entire customer success team had to become certified on, right? That every single agency program, you know, they had to become conversational marketing, you know, certified. That became the backbone of our CS strategy. And who produced it? It wasn't our CS team. It was our partnerships team. And then we turned it into a marketing asset. We had over 20,000 people also sign up. Like that's like the flywheel component. So yes, is it hard? Yeah, but the gold is where the, you know, people don't dig. You know, it gets buried in the places where you go do the hard work. And what I've seen is when you do that work, when you do map and document and go, hey, here's how I got to Pirate Island. And to your point, Max, you have that's the only way you're going to build trust internally with your CS team or your sales team to go, hey, this partner professional or this program is legitimate, or the external parties, the partners themselves.
My favorite part about that story about the Drift thing was how you certified people. And that was you either do it with a client or you don't. It's like we can build you the blueprint on how to do it. But at the end of the day, you might need to break some rules. Right. You might need to reinvent stuff. You might encounter something we've never seen or thought of. And so you either do it or you don't. And it's an ironic element of my work over the last 9 years, helping people productize things. It's like, we're coming up with a really good plan. It's going to give you confidence. And this is like how it might go.
Right.
But also, it almost never goes this way.
So Max, I want to go back to this point you made about strategy. So if you are a partner pro and you are trying to get an agency program going, you're saying don't worry about working with agencies unless they are doing strategy. If they're not doing the strategic component, then that's probably, like, if they're just focused on implementation, that's not going to pan out. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I'm saying if you want them to adopt a strategic service, for example, in the Drift days, it was conversational marketing. If we expect an agency to work with a client's executive team to come up with a conversational marketing strategy and fundamentally change the way they think about marketing and sales, do not go after an agency that hasn't done strategy and only implements conversational marketing software. There's a spectrum of strategic and tactical. And so my point is that is one of the hardest things to do, and maybe something you can't teach, is how to have the confidence to do strategy work versus tactical work. You have to meet an agency where they're at in that tactical strategic spectrum. Mm. And so maybe that's all I'm saying, is that when you're talking to an agency about a new service or integrating a service that has your software sort of inherently built into it, really understand what they're offering today and integrate what you're doing into the existing conversations that they're already having and the services that they're already having. Go slow. Don't say, oh, that's the way you're doing it's cool. have you heard of this other thing? Here's a different conversation you can have. It's just like it. Nah, it's hard.
I'm curious your take on, because I've kind of seen sometimes an agency that is too far on the strategic, like all they do is kind of consult on frameworks and strategy, and there isn't really an implementation component. That can be really hard to work with them if you're like, okay, at the end of the day, somebody's got to get our software implemented and get people, you know, trained and using it. If they're stuck in the sort of really high level, I don't know, like how do you bridge those things? Because I can totally see if you're not at the strategic table, that's going to be difficult, especially if you're selling.
You can always find somebody to do the work.
Yeah, that's fair.
You guys are the partner people. Find a partner.
Yeah. You know?
I don't see that as a problem. I see that as a blessing. Oh, your problem is that you only sit at the decision maker table. You're 100% focused on the direction of the company. You have the full attention of leadership. That's not a problem. The only question is, you know, which one of the thousand of implementation partners are you going to pick? And so this is exactly what I did when I left my agency, because my agency did strategy and implementation. We were doing content strategy. So we were creating content and we were doing content strategy. I left the agency. I said, I'm going to do the strategy work. I charged $20,000 for a strategy. It took me 4 weeks. Great process. I think it was like 10 or 15 hours or something. So more than $1,000 an hour, which is the only equation that should matter for any agency, by the way. That's a different topic. $1,000 an hour or don't do it. And so so I left and I would do the strategy. And then as part of the strategy, I would recommend three service partners in that documentation. Hmm. Before I delivered that strategy, I would call up all three of those service partners. I would say, hey, I want you to take a look at the deliverable for my client. I just want to make sure that I'm representing you properly and that you have the capacity should they say yes. The client would pick one. The client might not pick any of them, but I would get a referral from each of those three partners within 30 days. Hmm. So you don't need vendor, to do, like, somebody needs to do the work, but you don't need to do it.
Well, and so that's the question. If you're a vendor, a software vendor, do you need to be working with both of those, with you, the agency that's just doing the strategic stuff, and all three of those implementation partners you're going to recommend, right? Or is it sufficient to be like, hey,
I think
you
might be getting caught up on the point a little bit, Isaac. I might interject.
Go ahead, Jared.
Because here's what I would say. Someone that's just going to like adjust buttons inside of a SaaS application, right? What the strategy person is doing, or like the right person, is they're doing the strategy and then the change management, like the documentation, the process. Here's what's going to be done. That's a button clicker. You can hire a button clicker. You can appoint a button clicker. You can outsource a button clicker, because you're giving them, here's the work to be done, right? This should come in the form of like checklists and process, et cetera, that person does one time or on a recurring basis, right? So it's not that you need another partner per se, although you could. You certainly could use another partner if there's some like data expertise that's needed and you're kind of orchestrating from a top level. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive though. Like, people have different billable resources. You know, you have the lawyer at the top dog, he's charging $650 an hour. Then you have a paralegal that's charging, you know, or assistant counsel is charging $300 and a paralegal that's $150. And then an analyst that's doing, you know, $80, right? There's these different billable hours in every service industry.
Look, I haven't been on the software side. I just ask Jared what's going on. But typically I see there's different tiers. There's the partners that can change a client's overall approach to how they go to market, you know, and Nearbound requires that. There was outbound and then there was inbound. And I was a part of the inbound thing. And there was the people at the top that were like, okay, HubSpot's actually going to invest in you to go out and change the way companies think, operate, invest, like change the whole thing. That's not the freelancer on Upwork. So, yep. So there's tiers. The world need, this might not, anyway. You know, have you seen the world needs ditch diggers too, Danny? We get it. So look, there, and that goes back to my point of understanding who your partners are. There's people that can create there's organizations that can create strategic change with their clients, and they've already done that. So help them sort of add a nuance to that, add a new flavor. You can help an organization adopt the near-bound mindset when they've already been creating strategic change in organizations and are looking for something new, are looking for the newest angle, because they've helped them change from outbound to inbound. They were a part of that. And now inbound to near-bound, and then AI or up, down, out of town bound, whatever the next thing is going to be, they're going to be prepared for it because they have the ear of the executive teams. Then there are the people that are going to be up and coming, that understand technology, that are extremely specialized, and you're going to need an army of those people.
You mentioned, whatever the next thing, AI, whatever. I'm curious, you're connected with, this agency world. What do you see kind of the phases? So as AI is starting to proliferate, is it like phase one, hey, this is a boon for agencies because if they learn how to be smart and figure out how to use AI, because companies all want to know. But then phase two, is AI going to replace a bunch of, the work that a lot of these agencies are doing? Like, what, just on a very macro level, where do you see the industry going because of AI or other technologies?
Yeah, everything.
All of it. All at once.
All of it gone. There's literally a chapter in the book called Burn Your Implementation Business to the Ground. And I wrote that at the, I wouldn't say the dawn, because I knew it was happening before that. But when the gig economy was really popularized and everyone was like, oh my God, the gig economy. And you saw Upwork and, all these people, before COVID, like the phase before COVID, when people were like, oh my God, I could like just create a business for myself online. And there's like Zoom. I was on Zoom way before COVID. So you could actually get people to do things that didn't, that weren't attached to this tens or hundreds of thousand dollars agency bill to do SEO or writing or things like that. So I would have given you the same answer if you were asking me, Max, what's the gig economy going to do to agency services? I would say it's going to destroy them. And by the way, I have a book coming out and there's a chapter called Burn Your Implementation Business to the Ground. I think AI is just that times 1,000.
Well, I rarely ever plug previous episodes on the podcast, but if you haven't checked out Jocko Vanderkooij's episode, the one prior to Max, it is just, he minced no words, Max. So it's funny to see Jocko, who's like, kingpin of kind of SaaS and consulting. He was not optimistic about the future of anything related to go to market at all. He was like, the whole playbook's going to be rewritten, and y'all are lucky that you even have the jobs that you have right now.
Yeah.
It was pretty thing, pessimistic.
The only thing that remains is how do we use AI to go to market? So we're back to the basics of strategic consulting, helping leaders make decisions. What technology should we use? Who should we pay? That's it. That's what you do. So my
dad would always, a brand affinity and trust, right? Like, yeah, there's AI, we trust Amazon, we trust Uber, we trust Tesla, we trust Apple. Like, brand affinity still will be a thing because they can deliver repeatedly on these outcomes.
My dad always said, you don't want to lose, don't play the game. He was quoting my Yugoslavian hockey coach when I was 10, which is a very scarring experience, by the way. It's probably why I'm so darn competitive. That guy, I cried for months. This was back when Yugoslavia was a country. Saw how that worked out for them. But the point is, Jared's laughing.
I tried not to laugh into the mic.
The point is there was a game, and the game was like, what can we charge for that new labor could produce? And AI has completely replaced all that new labor. So we got to teach people how to use AI, and those with an ear of their clients' leadership teams are the only ones that are going to get paid to help them figure stuff out.
It seems like they're two sides of the same coin. So I want to make sure that, because I feel like we may or may not have got there in some agreement with Jocko on the previous podcast. Dude,
I don't know where we went with Jocko. We were all over the place. He was banned by the river.
It's a must listen.
And by the way, it sounds like you should listen to Jocko, because I have no idea like even what's going on with AI. I'm just like an eternal pessimist that nothing will exist after the fact.
But
I saw Terminator. That was enough for me.
Well, no, but I think these are two sides of the macro shift, is that because of AI, that everything has a cause and effect, and most people don't see the second order effects, right? So it's like, oh, AI is disrupting, many things. Go to market and B2B will certainly be one of those things across marketing, sales, and success. But there is every force has an equal and opposite reaction. It's that I believe that what's going to happen and what is happening on the other side of it is because of the proliferation of mass amounts of information and the automation of so many tasks. Just the fact that something's automated doesn't mean that we trust it. Just because information is more easily accessible doesn't mean that we trust it. That we are then turning to people and our networks more and more, meaning that these relationships that agencies have or software companies have, if they are good ones, right, they've consistently delivered for their clients. They've consistently delivered, through their software. One of those two things. Those things have to be leveraged to acquire more clients, more so than just producing content by AI or automating its delivery or the conversion by AI. Like that nearbound approach, so to speak, is something that is the opposite side of that coin, right? There's every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Maybe I phrase it this way: as content creation proliferation gets cheaper, targeting and personalization is cheaper and easier and all of these things, when you are on the buyer side, are you likely, when you're making a decision about some new thing to purchase, are you more likely in the future or even now to do more Googling and more reading articles and more looking at content, or more likely to go to somebody that you trust and say, hey, which one should I buy? Like, where do you see those trending, right? I see the personal one trending up and the Googling trending down.
But we're in a bubble of skepticism. It was like when people, like when they invented the car and people were like, that's not cool. Or like the internet, and they're like, no, that's not gonna be a thing. We're there with AI. So Damn. It was like, in the beginning, it was help clients understand what's possible. And then the internet was like, dude, read an article, like, cool. So strategy and consulting became, hey, we're going to help you decide what you should do in the midst of all these possibilities. The next phase is like, just ask your phone what you should do with your billion-dollar corporation, with all of the, like, the information is there. But we are in that skeptical period of like, what was his name?
Jocko.
Jacobim Mugatu. I'm sorry, Jocko. I the title of my first book was and do other things, but how to productize consulting services and do other things better too. So I'm a big fan of Zoolander. Anyway, Jocko.
Greatest reference.
Yeah. So like, we're just in a phase of skepticism in between the value being, let me help you decide what to do in the wake of all these decisions. And there's a piece of technology that already knows.
So you think that, like the declining value of Googling things, which is happening right now in our midst, AI will make that bounce back. Like whatever, instead of asking Google, you ask chat, whatever, versus people will be resort to smaller circles of trust.
I think it's both.
Well, like I said, I have no idea what AI even is. But I know that it's going to create disruption. And in any era of disruption, leadership teams are going to ask the people that they trust what they should do, and they will pay for that.
Yeah.
If you don't have strong relationships with your clients' leadership teams, you are out.
Bingo. 100%.
That's it, man. That's it.
It's over. It's over.
Yeah.
That's the optimistic point of view. It's over for you.
Well, because the optimistic side is if you do have those relationships, opportunity, right?
Yeah. It's not even opportunity. It's like, hey, you guys don't know what's going on, right? You can pay us to help you figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
That's where we should be at right now. And the truth is no one knows what's going on. All you have is the quality of your relationships. Mm. And I think that's a good time to strengthen your relationships with partners and have trusted people that you've partnered with, that you've proven you can do work with, introducing you to folks. Like, there's going to be this era of skepticism, I think. You know what? It doesn't even matter what I think, because I have no idea what I'm talking about with the whole AI thing. But like, I don't trust anything that I see. I really don't. I'd rather look at Isaac in the eyes and go, Isaac, have you worked with this person? What do I need to know? And you could be like, they produce, they're a pain in the butt, they're always late on deliverables, but eventually they come through. I'd be like, that's my guy. Make an introduction. Like, no one's perfect. I'd rather just a human being,
right,
tell me, because I can't read their website. I can't even call a reference of theirs, because the reference that they give me is going to be that person that's their, you know, number one fan and that went perfectly.
You should hear Isaac's references of like me. Jared is the first and absolute last player that you want on the team. You're mad at him the entire game, but whenever there's a couple seconds left on the clock, you give him the ball. It's like you're mad at him the entire game, but then, you know, there's that shot at winning, you give Jared the ball.
That is accurate. Yes, you will be frustrated, but you will also be celebrating hoisting the trophy. So
my favorite quote on the workbook is the work is not for sissies. I went from charging $2,000 to $25,000 and complained the whole time.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like if it works, you're going to hate it. Like, you're just not going to like that.
So the first book, Max, was the Consultant Survival Guide.
The first one was Agency Survival Guide, and then Consultant Survival Guide.
And then now you have the third one coming out.
Sort of,
maybe. Okay, well, we won't drop that.
The world's worst book for consultants. Yes, it is in a deep state of development.
Is that the title?
The world's worst book for consultants. In fact, let's contribute to it now. Isaac, what is the worst advice you've received from a consultant?
The worst advice I've received from a consultant?
Yes.
Crank up your paid ad spend.
Perfect. Chapter 12. Way to go, Isaac. Jared? No. Wait a minute. We need to wait till page 140. Let me talk to you in 6 months. We'll get a contribution from Jared. Oh. We won't tell him about it.
Yep.
All right. No, I'm just kidding. Go on. World's worst advice.
Oh my gosh. I would probably say it was legal advice. So a legal consultant, on some structure as it related to a certain deal that costed hundreds of thousands of dollars more than it should have.
That could be, and that's a whole new section. That's part six.
Yeah. Isaac's smiling. No comment from you, Isaac.
Are there good legal consultants? That's the question.
There'll be AI bots in the future.
AI will solve this problem.
I will readily replace my lawyer with a legal bot for sure.
So the premise of this new book, Max, is this like
lawyers are done.
Is this like a compilation of all of the like bad things, like how not to be a bad consultant?
Yeah, I wanted to have fun. You know what did it? Like, I've always been an against the grain person, and I think that humor is one of the last things that will survive after AI.
Oh, 100%.
So like when my mom called me and she was like, Max, I got your book. What's up with the subtitle? You printed these? Because it says Learnings for Make Benefit, the Glorious Profession of Consulting. Which, of course, for a human being with a personality is clearly a reference to Borat.
Yep, right.
I don't think AI is going to be able to do that at least for another 6 months.
Oh my God.
So for 6 months, I've got humor on my side. But yeah, I think it's the last remaining thing. So yeah, the world's worst book for consultants. I see so many people saying it's the number one bestseller. I'm not ragging on you, Jared, because there's bestsellers, and then there's like my book, and my book was number one bestseller in some obscure category too. And I was like, look at this. Yep. And I was like, yeah, in reality, there's some cool pictures and people say nice things, but like, it's not a proper book like yours.
It looks like a proper book.
Yeah. Like there was clearly, anyway, huge fan of your book, but I wanted to make the world's worst book for consultants. And my favorite idea was that I am going to have everyone leave 1-star reviews on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So that it is also the worst rated book.
Yep.
And when people say, how do I find it? I say, just sort by worst rated. And I will be proud that day. Yeah.
I love that. It's so funny because you're just all of a sudden you spurred a memory that I had forgotten about, that I had a very similar, not around the consulting world, but book that I was kind of working on. I never ended up doing anything with, but it was something similar around, I can't remember what the title was going to be, but where I had a whole campaign I was going to do about trying to get 1-star reviews and try to get people to say like, and use spirits. All the quotes, we're like horrible spirits. Things about the yeah. book. Yeah. Yeah. It was going to be called like the worst book since the one that you didn't write or something like that. Like, you know, cause whatever.
It needs some work, but you know.
Yeah. It was something around making fun of the fact that everybody says they're going to write a book and they don't. So anyway.
Well, you got to talk to my publishing strategist, Corey Kirby.
We'll get together. We'll sync up. We have a 6-month window where we still have a chance to be funny. So I'm going to try to seize that.
Well, let me test this one on you because I got a children's book in mind.
Okay.
It's called The Consultant's Survival Guide for Children, How to Make More Space for Activities So That We Can Be Best Friends.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you don't get that reference, we can't be friends.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
I love it.
Oh, I totally. It took me a second there because I was thinking about the content of the book, but then it clicked for me. That's amazing.
Yeah. So then we got Zoolander, Borat, and...
Step brothers.
Yeah. Circle gets the square.
Well, no, we got all of those. We got all of those references, Max.
Yeah, but I want like a 12-page children's book about like sacrificing personal life for work and just like the bass awkwardness of that. And I think it'd be a heck of a children's book.
It'd be a great children's book, and you know, guilt all the parents into being like, okay, so I got to get this stuff figured out.
sign me up for the pre-order. I'm in.
Yeah, we'll drop one more little pre-order before we begin to wrap here. If anyone is interested, I'm gonna see if we can blow up my LinkedIn DMs. Max and I may or may not be working on a secret project. May or may not be. We'll neither confirm nor deny.
He's not sure if this is.
We'll neither confirm nor deny. Around a nearbound operating system that we may be talking about in the future. So if you are trying to figure out how the heck to overlay Nearbound to your entire business, and you're in the SaaS company, and I know we have a lot of folks that listen to that, shoot me a note, because I wanted to bring Max on today for a couple of reasons. A is to demonstrate, you know, how hard it is to help agencies and build a solutions program. And then the second part of it is, you know, going and making that change happen inside of your SaaS company. Max read the book, we talked, and we had a fantastic conversation around, well, how the heck are people taking this book and going and implementing it inside of their company? So we wanted to turn that into a service and an offering with vis-a-vis Reveal, vis-a-vis Nearbound, you know, all this stuff. So we're going to go do it, and I'm going to do it. And so if you're listening to this at the very tail end of the pod, shoot me a LinkedIn DM if you're like, hey, I would be interested in signing up for something like that. Shoot me a DM looking for a few guinea pigs in SaaS. Spots are limited. Like literally we're talking like 3-5, you know, companies. Shoot me a note. Well,
I'm a fan of one for the record.
Yeah. You know, no, this given
take
the
card, get in line. Out, that's where I'm at.
Right. One, and then
cut a beef.
And then we'll go from there. So,
Jared, you told me I would like Max. You were right. Sometimes you're right, Jared. Sometimes you're right.
Of course, the one, the only Max trailer.
Yeah, Isaac and I have been blowing butterfly kisses at each other for the last hour.
And if you're trying to figure out the agency world and build a program around there, you are from the agency world and you don't follow Max, go follow Max Trailer on LinkedIn. His content's hilarious. It is applicable. I followed him for years and he's my number one go-to when it comes to all things consulting, agency building or helping agencies on either side of the table. I think his advice is applicable, even if he's like, I've not been on the ISV side. You still need to listen to him if you want to help on the solutions or agency side. Get his books. Especially for those folks of you that are launching freelance or consulting businesses, like he's the guy. And then Max, the podcast and the show, I think you got it on the mug.
Beers with Max. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beers with Max. I interview people about how they monetize what they know.
And beers are involved?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
Okay. I mean, I feel like we'll say sometimes.
It depends on how I'm feeling.
Okay.
Like you said, alcohol is bad.
See, now I took you out of context earlier, and now you took me out of context, so we're even.
Yeah, but like you know, you gotta feed the beast. So.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Max, we're gonna absolutely have to have you back on to talk about some of the stuff that we're gonna be doing around Nearbound. It's gonna be a ton of fun. Thank you for all the learnings over the years towards me. It's always been a pleasure. And thanks so much for coming on the Nearbound podcast, my man.
Page 140, Nearbound by Jared Fuller, chapter 10.5.
Yeah, the Pirate Island problem.
Right before you get to the credits. Before the credit reel. You know what? It's like that. It's like the outtakes. I'm like the outtakes.
Yeah, you gotta stay till after the credits.
Everyone
has left the theater, but you're still waiting because you
that's
know.
Right.
Yep.
That's the powerful story of pirates.
There's still two more chapters after you. There's still two more chapters. Overlay and Mindset, which those are two of the best chapters.
I'll have to reread those.
You're so triggered.
I was falling asleep by the time I got to my own.
Oh, that's what a screaming review. I appreciate you so much, Max. And with that. I was falling asleep by the time I got to it.
We should try.
I was falling asleep because I ran out of ink, man. This thing is like, I need a new book. Like, email Amazon, tell me to get a new one because mine is saturated with ink and excitement and tears because of the things I need to build.
Which
I like it. The tears part. That's a good one. I like that. I haven't heard tears yet, but like you said, if it works, you're going to hate it. So, you know, there's always a little pain.
All right, one more thing. If you're doing professional services, you got to break into people's physical world. Because it's easy just to put it in a file somewhere that doesn't exist. So I have a few things that have been really fun for people that I work with. I've got a bullshit paddle. Because sometimes I say things like, oh, I did 25 calls this month already, and it's the 19th. And people are like, that's not true. And so I give all the people I work with a bullshit paddle. I send them an actual paddle, and they can hold it up and call bullshit. And then I have to like actually show proof of the stuff that I'm talking about. So that's fun. I also send people a box of tissues that says, if you've got an issue, here's a tissue, because of the emotional breakdowns and the challenges that come with changing your services. So anyway, it's just an inspiration to like, you know, break into people's physical world, give them a workbook, you know, don't just give them a piece of a document online that says, you know, this is going to change your world. Like give them something that will live on the corner of their desk.
Right.
This thing.
Yep.
Anyway,
I love it. The one, cheers, the only Max Trailer, everybody. Get his books, follow him on LinkedIn, listen to his content. Been a friend for a long time. And until next time, Nearbound. We'll see you around on the Nearbound podcast.